welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levine, you're your host for this hour of radio horror stories. Later on, it's Agnes Moorhead, star of Suspense and the 13th Sound. But right now, it's Murder at Midnight, with future Suspense director Anton Emleter at the helm for the syndicated broadcast from July 19, 1946, called Murder is a Lonely Business.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Murder's a Lonely Business. And now, Murder at Midnight. Unusual stories of terror and mystery by radio's masters of the macabre. This tale, A Study of Murder in Duet, is by William Morwood. Its title, Murder's a Lonely Business. At a cemetery, a burial is taking place.
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God in His great mercy to take unto Himself the soul of our brother.
The two chief mourners, Fred and Grace Tilson, stand beside the open grave. And as he looks at his wife, bitter thoughts course through Fred's mind.
Look at her. Look at her standing there, dabbing her eyes with a handkerchief. Tears. Real tears after what she did. After what she made me do. She doesn't know what sincerity is, or love, or pity either. She's hard. Hard all the way through. And I never knew. Never even suspected her. Till we killed him. Now, that's the way she acted. I'll never forget it. Never. A nightmare always. How can I go on living with her? How can I ever trust her again? What am I to do? Oh, Lord, I'd give anything for it.
To think I ever married a sniveling creature. I believe he's really crying. Really sorry. As if he cared a hoop about his Uncle Edward outside of the money he could get out of him. He was ready enough to help put the old man out of the way the other night. Now his nerve's gone. All he can think about is a drink. That's the only time I feel safe with him. When he's drunk. And not always then. The way he's been carrying on lately, Lord knows what he'll say or do next. I'll have to watch him every minute of the time. He's a fool.
And through thy mercy, O our Lord, who livest and reignest with the Father and the Holy Ghost, ever one God, world without end. Amen.
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 Goodbye, Uncle Edward. They're throwing dirt on your coffin now. But you won't mind. You're cold and silent now. Very different from the way you were 3 nights ago.
3 nights ago. Was that all it was? Another lifetime, but... Yes, that's right. Driving up to his house in the dark. Letting ourselves in.
Uncle Edward!
He must be up in his study.
I guess so. Servant's night out. Uncle Edward?
The door above opened, and Uncle Edward started down the marble staircase. In my mind's eye, instead of Uncle Edward, I could see my friends, a whole crowd filling the room, and myself in a gorgeous gown descending to greet them. A much more fitting picture than the stodgy form of Uncle Edward as he came down toward us.
Well, well, this is a surprise.
I thought we'd drop in, Uncle Edward. It's been a long time.
6 weeks, to be exact, Fred. How are you, Grace?
Wonderful, thanks, Uncle Edward.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You look a little off your feed. Come on into the library. You'll be more comfortable here. Oh, a drink, Fred?
Why,
don't be polite. From what I hear, you're rarely seen without one these days.
You sound as if you'd had spies watching us, Uncle Edward.
It's entirely possible. I've certainly been interested in your activities. For instance, I hear you can be found at a gambling house almost every evening, Grace.
Oh, only the fashionable ones, where everybody goes. You've got to keep in the swim nowadays.
If you can afford it. You can't. Not on Fred's salary.
That's the trouble.
Well, frankly, Uncle Edward, that's why we've come here tonight. We're in a jam again.
Money?
What else?
And you want me to bail you out, huh? Well, I'll be equally frank with you. This time, I'm not going to do it.
Well, just that.
I'm sorry I've helped you out of messes often enough in the past. Each time, I hoped you'd pull yourself together, settle down, and lead solid, respectable lives. But each time, you disappointed me. Now, I've given up hoping.
Uncle Edward, I promise you...
Too late, Fred. I can't believe your promises anymore. I've given you and Grace every chance. Now, I'm washing my hands of you. You can't expect help from me ever again. Now or in the future.
Exactly. What does that mean?
My lawyer's coming here tomorrow. And I'm going to cut Fred out of my will. Cut him out entirely.
Uncle Edward.
Every cent I have is to be left to charity.
Well, you're not serious. You can't be. It's not fair. I'm your only nephew and
There's no use talking, Fred. My mind is made up. Now, would you care to discuss the weather?
No.
I thought you wouldn't, Grace.
Come on, Fred. Uncle Edward, I advise you to change your mind about this.
I beg your pardon?
Because if you don't, you may live to be sorry.
We went outside. Grace was in a white rage, and I was all jumping myself. We walked around the garden paths, trying to get hold of ourselves before we started back to town.
You know what this means, don't you, Fred? The end of everything. We'll never be able to get credit once it's known that Uncle Edward's cut us off.
Yes, I know.
Somehow, some way, we've got to stop him from changing his will.
But how? You know there's no use arguing with him. He's as stubborn as a mule. Besides, there's no time left. He's going to do it tomorrow.
I know. Unless, of course, something happens to him before that.
Such as?
He could die.
What?
Suddenly.
Some chance he's as healthy. Grace, what are you thinking of?
You know.
You're mad.
If you want to spend the rest of your life struggling with debts, not able to do anything, I don't.
But Fred,
everything's perfect for it. The old man's alone in the house. No one knows we called this evening. No one will.
Stop it. I won't listen to you.
Be a man for once in your life. Everything you want. Money, luxury. For 5 minutes worth.
Yes, but how?
The gun. The gun he keeps in the desk in his study. You've seen it.
Yes, but...
We'll take the money, valuables, to make it look like a robbery. Well, what are you afraid of? The sight of a little blood?
Grace, I don't know you when you talk like this.
I know what I'm after for both of us. It's our only chance of a future. Together. Are you coming?
Hi. Yes.
All right. Let's go in. The servants will be coming back. We haven't any time to waste.
We went back into the house, climbed the long staircase to Uncle Edward's study. My mouth was dry, my knees were shaking. We reached the landing.
Knock on the door.
Grace, suppose...
It's too late to suppose anything. Knock.
Yes? Come in, I was expecting you back.
You were?
Certainly. I didn't think you'd let the money go that easily. Not after Grace's threat.
What do you mean?
You should have been a man, Grace. You've a completely ruthless streak in you. You'll stop at nothing to get what you're after. No wonder you've led poor Fred around by the nose so long.
Now, look here, Uncle Edward.
Sorry to hurt your feelings, Fred, but you must admit it's true. Now, if you two will explain why you came back...
We hope to make you change your mind.
You should know me better than that. I've said my last word.
Not your last, Uncle Edward. Not yet.
What Grace means
you
is...
You don't have to explain, Fred. Her interest in my desk explains itself. The right-hand drawer, Grace. Were you by any chance looking for this?
The gun.
Yes, I took the precaution of removing it. As I said, I was expecting you back.
I don't know what you're talking about, Uncle Edward. I was only looking for your checkbook. I thought the least that you could do was to help us out of our present difficulty.
It's a good story, Grace, but not quite good enough. Now, as it's almost 12, perhaps you'd both be good enough to leave my house permanently.
Well, you win, Uncle Edward. I suppose we were foolish to think that we could find a soft spot in that stone heart of yours.
You were foolish, all right. This way.
This reminds me of the old days when Fred and I were first married, when we used to come and visit you. You used to see us to the head of the stairs when it came time to go. Just like this.
That was a long time ago.
I wish those days could come back.
Impossible. Well, good night, Fred, and goodbye.
Aren't you going to shake hands with your only nephew?
Well, since it's for the last time, goodbye, Fred.
Hold him, Fred. Hold him, Fred.
Hold me, Grace.
Hold him, Fred.
No, I'll give you money. All the money you want.
No, Fred.
Oh, you monsters. I'll make you pay for this.
Grace, what did we do? What did you make?
Get down there, quick.
Some pulse. His heart. He's dead. Grace, when they find him.
An accident. The old man tripped on the stairs and broke his back.
The money's ours, Fred. Everything we wanted.
What's that? Grace, you heard?
At the foot of the stairs, and the white-faced couple staring at each other. Did they hear a voice from beyond? Is it possible for the dead to make the living pay for
murder at midnight? Here is Grace Tilson to continue our story.
It went according to plan. The inquest raised no ugly questions or suspicions. And then after Uncle Edward's funeral, we settled down in the great old mansion. I could have been happy. So happy. Except for Fred. He'd taken to drinking again. Haven't you had enough, Fred?
Not a little drink won't do me. Excuse me.
You're such an idiot. The way you've been acting ever since...
We did in poor Uncle Edward. Don't be afraid to say it, Grace. We're alone now.
Why did you give up your job so suddenly?
I'm a rich man now. No need to work.
But it looks so suspicious. And the way you've let yourself slip. A dirty shirt. You haven't shaved in 2 days.
Don't tell me you're ashamed of
it. I can't ask anyone to the house. And I had such plans for us. Entertaining, parties, making a name for ourselves.
Sorry, that's not my idea of a career.
In heaven's name, what is?
Drinks. More drinks. Then another one.
I won't let you turn into a drunken bum. I won't be disgraced like that.
I'll do exactly what I like, and you won't stop me. Don't forget, my love. We share a little secret together.
I'm not forgetting.
No matter what happens, you're tied to me for the rest of your life.
I wouldn't be too sure of that, Fred. If I get a chance at what I want, you won't stand in my way. Nothing will.
What did she mean by that? I thought about it, brooded over it, couldn't forget it. Then one evening as we sat together in a nightclub, things became clearer.
Did you hear me, Fred?
What?
I said I wanted a cigarette.
Oh,
Certainly, madam. Here you are. Match.
If you can hold it steady enough. Why do you have to get soused every time we go out?
A tribute to your intoxicating charm.
Oh, don't be so... Oh, well, there's Ronnie.
Good old Ronnie. Dowager's delight.
No, if you'll only look over this way.
Is that dress you're wearing? You will.
Ronnie! Oh, Ronnie!
The change that came over her. Smile. Sparkling eyes as he came over to our table.
Well, hello there. This is a pleasant surprise, bumping into you again, Tilson.
Getting to be a regular routine. The theater, the races, everywhere I go with Grace.
Yes, we seem to share a lot in common, Fred.
Sit down, Ronnie. What do you have to drink?
Oh, nothing, thanks. I've had my quota for the evening.
Well, I'm glad someone knows when to stop.
Maybe Ronnie's got other vices.
I have, Fred. One of them's dancing. Do you mind if I take Grace out on the floor for a turn?
Why, ask me. I'm sure Grace will agree to anything you say.
Fred, now what kind of a nasty...
Oh, come on, Grace. Fred didn't mean anything. Well, see you later, old boy.
They danced well together. As I watched them, I remembered the things I'd heard about Ronnie. Of his rich wife who died so conveniently. The fortune he'd run through. I saw Grace look into his eyes. Their lips moved. The suspicion grew on me till it became a certainty. They were plotting my death. The veins stood out in my forehead. My hands grew cold. But I knew exactly what I had to do. I had to strike first. I had to kill them before they killed me. If only I knew what they were plotting. If only I could hear. They were whispering to each other.
Grace, darling, you're so silent.
It's Fred. How dare he act that way?
Well, he's a very unpleasant person.
Of course, he's under the weather. But that's no excuse.
Just means he doesn't give a rap for you. Never has.
Well, don't let's talk about him.
Right. Music's lovely.
Yes.
So are you.
Ronnie.
You dance like an angel. I could hold you in my arms forever. Oh, we're just made for each other. You know that, Grace? Don't you?
I'd rather not think about it.
But you must. Have you considered what we talked about the other day?
It's impossible.
Why? I love you more than anything in the world. We have the same tastes and ambitions. We could be a wonderful success together.
But...
You love me too, don't you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, then what's stopping us? What's so precious about the life of a drunken bum?
Fred's my husband.
Husband? Do you love him? Even respect him?
No. I did feel sorry for him. But not anymore. Not after tonight. I hate him.
That's more like it. Well, then there's nothing to interfere.
Except...
The danger? Leave that in my hands. You have just one job to do, Grace.
And that?
Get Fred up to my place in the mountains for a vacation. I guarantee he'll never come back.
I don't know if I should have been suspicious. Fred agreed to go up to Ronnie's place with surprising ease. It was almost as if he'd been expecting the invitation. The night we planned to do it, we sat in the living room, just the three of us. Ronnie was playing the piano.
Fred, I'm awfully rusty. I haven't practiced in weeks.
It sounds grand to me, Ronnie.
Why don't you join him, Grace? I know you're just dying to play with Ronnie. Duet, I mean.
Well, that's all we have time for anyway. I promised the Pearsons we wouldn't be late.
Oh, that beach picnic. Tell you the truth, I don't feel much like it.
But you promised to go, Fred.
Do you? World of good, old boy. Wonderful night for a swim.
You both seem very anxious to get me down to that lake.
Why? Why, not at all. If you want Grace and me to go alone...
All right, I'll come. But I've got to go upstairs for my bathing suit. Wait for me here.
Well, hurry it up, old boy. All set, Grace? You know exactly what to do?
I think so.
You make a great fuss about Fred drinking. That'll be remembered afterwards. I'll take care of him at the raft. Push his head underwater.
Well, he'll struggle. He'll call out.
Not in the condition he's in. He's as weak as a baby. Be all over in a few minutes. I'll swim back.
Ronnie.
Yes?
Isn't there some other way?
We love each other so much. Can't we just...
run off together? Let's be realistic, darling. We need the money. His money. Love in a cottage isn't our style.
I suppose not. Where is he? What's keeping him so long?
I'm just as glad. Come on, Grace. I want to make sure there's an extra bottle of whiskey for him in the car. This way, darling. Through here, into the garage.
Give me your hand, Ronnie.
Now, darling, everything's going to be all right.
Just being with you. Ronnie.
Yes?
I saw something moving.
Where?
Over there. Behind the car.
Fred!
Hello. Thought I'd hurry things up by coming straight out to the garage.
Well, you gave us quite a start.
Why, Grace? Something on your conscience?
Well, the Pearsons will be on our necks if we don't get started soon. Now, in you go. We're off to the races.
But just try to pick the winner. We drove out to the road. The winding road that led down to the valley. I knew just the spot where I had to leave them. From there on, their only companion would be the man with the sickle. Slow down, Ronnie.
Huh?
I'm not going to picnic after all. My head's splitting.
But it's too late to drive you back, Fred.
You won't have to. I'll walk. Just let me out.
Very well.
But, Ronnie...
It's all right, Grace. We don't want Fred to have a miserable time at the picnic when we can settle things so much better this way.
Oh, thanks. I hate to run out on you, but I've got my health to think of.
Oh, sure. Oh, incidentally, there's a shortcut back to the house through the fence there.
I don't see it.
Go on ahead. I'll turn the headlights on it.
Oh, thanks. Oh, so long. Have a good trip. Where are you going?
What we wanted, isn't it?
Not here. Not out here on the road.
It'll look like a hit-and-run accident. We'll double back at the bottom of the hill and pretend we came from another direction.
Oh, we won't get away with it, Ronnie. It's no use. They'll catch us this time.
Can't help it, Grace. Sorry. You've got to get hold of yourself.
Yes. Yes, I must. I can't go all to pieces. My hands are trembling. Where are you going?
Take the wheel. You're going to drive.
No, I...
Now, move over. Go on.
No.
Now, drive. Your life depends on it. Both our lives.
I started down this steep zigzag road, and slowly, my nerves relaxed. As the car swooped around the curves, I felt a strange acceleration.
Easy on these curves, Grace. It's a sheer drop if we go over the cliff.
Oh, are you scared now, Ronnie?
Well, I want to keep my neck in one piece.
You needn't worry. I'm a good driver. Fred always... Fred...
What's the matter?
Nothing.
Keep your mind on the road. There's a hairpin bend ahead of here that... Hey, look out!
Okay, I see it. I pushed on the brake. The pedal went all the way to the floor, but nothing caught. Nothing!
No worries. Now, do you know what I was doing in there in the garage? I disconnected the brakes.
He hit it!
The fence, Grace. The fence.
Yes, Grace. I meant to kill you and Ronnie.
Grace, slow down.
Oh, Ronnie, Fred, I'll take no time.
I can't.
Slow down. It's coming for you. It's too late now. Long, long drop on the runs.
Ronnie.
See you soon, Grace.
Thank you.
remember to be with us again when death plays host and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. The part of Grace was played by Helen Shields. Wendell Holmes was her husband. Carl Emery, her lover. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
Murder at Midnight on Tuned to Yesterday from July 19, 1946, a syndicated broadcast. The writer of that story, William Morwood, would also go on to pen broadcasts of The Shadow in the mid-1940s, and his last credit for writing a radio script on the air was for the You Are There series, bringing historical events to a modern radio audience, where he adapted the rich history of Columbus discovering America in 30 minutes. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, suspense with an all-star lineup, including the woman known as the First Lady of the series, Agnes Moorehead, and a story by future director Elliot Lewis with wife Kathy, who also starred in seemingly countless broadcasts of the show. This episode called The 13th Sound from February 13, 1947 on CBS.
Suspense!
We were driving too fast, but I knew that if I slowed down at all, I would begin to tremble. And so, although the road was tortuous, climbing steeply up the mountain, I kept my foot pressed hard on the gas pedal. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see that my husband was looking quietly into the green valley far below. He looked peaceful now. He had made his speech about driving too fast. I'd asked him to be quiet, and now he was quiet. I wondered what he would do if I stopped the car and told him right then that we were driving up to the Johnson house so that I might kill him. I parked the car on the highway at the foot of the dirt road leading up to the house. We walked quickly behind the heavy trees. My husband stopped once to wipe the dust off his shoes. I hurried him on, and we soon arrived at the front door. As planned, I'd forgotten the key. I did open my purse and look, however, and that gave me the opportunity to release the safety catch on the gun I had borrowed from my husband's belongings. I suggested that we try one of the windows. He agreed, and we slowly made our way through the underbrush that was growing wild at the side of the stucco building until we reached a first-floor window. The window was set high above the ground, and my husband had to stretch his body to reach it. I waited until he had his back to me, with his hands raised high in the air, reaching for the window frame. Then I opened my purse, took out the gun, aimed very carefully at a spot just in the center of his left shoulder blade, and pulled the trigger 4 times. He didn't fall right away. He had had his fingers over the window ledge, ready to unfasten the catch when the bullets hit him. With some terrible effort, he dug his nails into the stucco and tried to keep from dying. I couldn't move. I wanted to scream, but my throat felt paralyzed. He tried to turn his face and look at me, but he hadn't that much life left. At last, he fell. Screaming finally. I felt better for it. I bent and looked at my husband's body. He was quite dead. I wiped off the gun, his gun, and threw it behind an acacia bush. Then I walked back to the car, slowly and carefully removing any of my footprints which showed in the loose dirt of the road. At the car, I emptied some cigarette butts from the dashboard ashtray onto the road, dusted my shoes, then turned around and drove home.
put the car in the garage, went in and had my shower, and lay down in the library to wait. A few minutes after the grandfather clock struck 11, the telephone rang. Hello?
Miss Skinner?
This is she.
Miss Jonathan Brown, Sheriff's Office. I have some bad news for you.
My husband?
Yes, ma'am. He's been killed. Miss Skinner? Hello, Miss Skinner. You all right?
I waited quietly for a moment. Then I let the phone fall to the floor. I listened until I heard Jonathan Brown hang up. Then I replaced my telephone on its stand, went into the kitchen for some ice, which I put in a large Turkish towel. I then arranged myself carefully and attractively on the living room divan, and waited again.
Miss Skinner!
In here, please.
Oh, yes. You all right, Miss Skinner? That was a stupid thing for me to do, breaking the news that way, you know.
Oh, I'm all right.
Well, I came over as soon as you dropped the phone.
Well, I felt faint suddenly.
Well, no wonder.
Tell me what happened, Mr.
Brown, Jonathan Brown, Sheriff's Office.
Mr. Brown, please sit down.
Oh, thank you. Well, your husband was up at the Johnson house this afternoon, as well as we can figure. Up there on the side of the mountain, you know, and he must have been trying to get into the window, and somehow, somebody, well, shot him. You sure you want me to tell you?
I'm sorry. Go on, please.
Well, we looked around the place, couldn't see anything. Though we found the, weapon, it was a gun, found in the brush near where he was, and no footprints or anything except tire marks down the main highway and a bunch of cigarette butts where someone must have been sitting in the car, waiting, you know.
Those were my tire marks.
You was up there?
Well, I had an appointment to meet my husband this afternoon at the foot of the road leading up to the Johnson house. He had said that he'd had some business to attend to and would get a ride with this other person. He was very mysterious about it. Mm-hmm. I waited for an hour or more at the foot of the road. You were so clever to recognize the meaning of those cigarette stubs.
Well,
when he didn't come, I thought perhaps I was mistaken about the appointment, and so I drove home. I think about perhaps I'd gone up to the house, I might have saved my poor dear husband's life.
Now, terrible shock, I know.
I'm all right. I'll be all right.
Now, don't you worry about a thing, Miss Skinner. The sheriff's office will round up the guilty party or parties and have them brought to trial, you know.
Yes, I'm sure. I slept well that night for the first time in 10 years. My husband during his lifetime had snored loudly and steadily, and during his later years he had acquired the nervous and distressing habit of grinding his teeth in his sleep. This night all was quiet and peaceful in the house, in my house. And as I say, I slept beautifully. The next few days were also beautifully quiet. A few photographers and newspaper men, but they were kind and gentle and didn't make too much bother. Finally, Mr. Jonathan Brown called to say that he would send a car for me on Friday morning, the next day, as it turned out, to take me to the coroner's inquest. The small courtroom was crowded, and almost everyone there eyed me with great sympathy. The inquest proceeded evenly. There was as yet no evidence as to the identity of my husband's murderer. I again stated that I had left the tire marks and cigarette stubs at the foot of the road that led to the Johnson house. No, I hadn't heard a shot. No, my dear husband had no enemies. Then
I've had this blackboard brought to court so that I might show the position of the body when found. I think it might be of interest.
Very well. Proceed.
The body was found just below the first story window on the left side of the house. The dead man was obviously trying to gain admittance, you know. He didn't die immediately, as I will show you, but stayed alive long enough to try to keep himself from falling, since marks from each of his fingernails were found running down the side of the building. Here, then, is the windowsill. And here are the marks of his fingernails. And here is the spot where the body lay when it was discovered. And here, here's the house.
As he talked, he watched me.
Ground floor.
And I didn't know why until I heard the first scrape of the chalk against the blackboard. For one awful moment, it was the sound that had been made by my husband as he tried so desperately to hold himself alive. I found myself tightly holding the wooden table in front of me. My arms and body tense, trying not to faint.
Since a large deposit of the dried stucco from the building is found under each of the victim's fingernails, I believe I can best illustrate the manner of the victim's last moments with a physical illustration. Suppose I am the victim, you know, and this blackboard is the side of the building. We hear the gunshots, and then the victim slowly sinks to the ground.
Oh, please. Please, I can't say. Please, don't make it alive. I must have been taken home from the inquest. For the next consciousness I had, I was lying on the guest bed. In the corner sat Mr. Jonathan Brown. He must have seen my eyes open.
Ah, feeling better?
Yes, thank you. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Quite a strain, you know.
Yes, it was quite a strain.
And the coroner asked whether it'd be all right to go on without you. Everybody seemed agreed, you know, so we finished up while the doc looked you over.
What happened?
Oh, he said you'd be all right. Shock.
I meant about my husband.
Oh, and his death at the hand of persons unknown, you know.
Oh. Is there anything further I must do?
Not a thing, Miss Skinner.
You've been very kind.
Well, it's a terrible thing happened to you. Well, I'll be going now if there's nothing more you need from me.
No, nothing, thank you.
Well, goodbye then, and don't you worry. We'll find who did it, you know.
After he had left, I had the time to be angry at myself for my behavior at the inquest. What must the people have thought? To faint only from the noise of a piece of chalk on a blackboard? I wondered if Mr. Brown had suspected anything, because as I remembered back to earlier afternoon, he had been watching me as he drew those silly little diagrams on the board. He hadn't been looking anywhere else, not at the coroner or at any of the reporters, not even at what he was doing. He'd been looking at me. Well, of course he was looking at me. He was showing his sympathy. I slowly allowed myself to return to my former position in the community. I was able now to do the things I'd always wanted to do, but had been restrained from doing by a certain attitude of my husband's. He had never liked entertaining. He didn't believe that we should belong to the country club and take a civic pride in the fact that our home was the largest and most beautiful in the community. In fact, it was his desire to sell our lovely home that caused me to finally take that complete and drastic step. The first evening that I accepted an outside invitation was for one of the Wednesday night evenings of bridge at our club. At my table were the president of the bank and his wife. As I sat down, I noticed that a window pane on my left was shattered.
Good evening, Miss Gray. Miss Gray.
Well, good evening, Mr. Brown.
Good evening, Miss Skinner.
Good evening, Mr. Brown.
Well, I'm afraid I'm the culprit here. Playing ball with the kids this afternoon, and I threw one right through your lovely window.
Oh, really?
Yes. But I got old Sam here. I brought him along with new painted glass, and he'll fix us up ship-shape in no time at all. Go ahead, Sam, right over
there. Yes, Mr. Brown. Sure, don't mind me, folks. I'll be through here in just a jiffy. Don't worry about it.
Oh, incidentally, Miss Skinner, I always meant to ask you whether or not you minded noises, especially. Sharp noises, like, you see, chalk on a blackboard.
I don't understand. Chalk on a blackboard?
At the inquest, I always wondered about it. You fainted just when the chalk was scratching across the blackboard.
I don't remember hearing it. I'm afraid I fainted before you drew any diagrams.
Uh-huh.
I assume that's what you were planning to do, draw diagrams?
That's what I was planning to do, yes, ma'am.
Yes. Does he have to do that?
Is something wrong, Miss Skinner?
Does he have to do that?
Oh, Miss...
I can't...
Mrs. Skinner.
Again it had happened. And again, when the noise was made, it sounded like my husband's fingernails scraping down the rough side of the Johnson house. And again, as I slipped into darkness, I could see that Mr. Brown was watching me. I stayed at home for the next few days. I canceled all appointments. The heat really was unbearable. In October, I resumed my activities. I began to see people again. I grew especially interested in chamber music. Through my activity, I arranged a musical evening to be given by a group of which I was the second vice president. They planned the formation of a philharmonic society eventually. I went to the musical alone, and I was studying my program when...
Is the seat taken?
Oh, good evening, Mr.
Skinner. Mrs. Skinner, good evening. Didn't recognize you, ma'am.
Well, I was to be joined
well,
later.
I'll just sit here a moment then. You know, I'm terribly, terribly sorry about the other night.
Oh, there's really nothing at all for you to be sorry about.
Well, now, it's very kind of you to say that, you know, but I do feel guilty as all sin, being the cause of you getting sick.
Well,
like
really,
that,
Mr. Brown,
you know?
I wasn't sick at all. Mr. Gregg told me I had probably been affected by the heat.
Oh.
It was very close in the club that night, if you'll remember.
Oh, yes, yes, ma'am, it was. It was hot. Well, just so I don't feel it was my fault.
Oh,
you know?
No, I don't want you to feel it was your fault.
Yes, well, that's very kind of you, you know? All right. If you don't mind, I'll stay here until Deborah holds this seat gets here.
Oh, that's quite all right.
We crave your indulgence and a certain open-mindedness for giving a fair chance to the first piece with which we're going to open our program this evening. The title of this piece is The 13th Sound, and the composer is Julian Carrillo. This piece, because of the unorthodox nature of it, created a veritable furore in New York City some weeks ago on the occasion of its premiere. It's what you'd call, I guess, modern music. And the really unusual thing about it is that the instruments, instead of playing as they usually do in Mozart, Haydn, and such classical veins, play in quarter tones. Now, a quarter tone is somewhere in between the other tones, such as the we are accustomed to hearing. So, on this following piece, the instruments are not playing, as you would think, out of tune. This is the way it is supposed to sound. Thank you. So now the various members of the quartet will tune their various instruments into these quarter tones. This is a short piece, but I know you're going to like it. Tune up, gentlemen.
This should be very interesting. Don't you think, Miss Skinner, the 13th sound? Have you heard it?
Huh? No, I haven't.
All right. Too hot again, Mrs. Skinner? It does get stuffy here.
Oh, I know. All right, it's hot in here.
You look terribly peaked. Sure you're all right?
I'm quite... Excuse me, will you let me out, please? Excuse me, please let me out. I left Mr. Brown sitting there. My man drove me home. I've never liked modern music. I locked all the doors. I found a hammer and a piece of board. And I beat and beat and beat and beat on the board with the hammer as hard as I could. And finally, the heavy, steady, safe pounding that I made drove the other sharp, shrill, awful noise from my mind. Then I turned out all the lights, opened the windows, and went to sleep. I didn't sleep well, but I didn't stay awake either. I hadn't set the alarm next to my bed, and when I first awoke the next morning, for a minute I couldn't remember what had happened. I felt drugged. I got out of bed, put on a lovely chartreuse brocade housecoat, and started downstairs. The sun was shining outside. It was a beautiful day. Not the sort of day when you could be disturbed by unrelated noises. I felt grand when I got downstairs. And I heard... I didn't know. I didn't care. I knew only that I had to stop it before it happened to me again. Stop it! Stop it! Please stop it! Get out of here! Who told you to do your work here? Did someone tell you to make that noise near my house?
Why, no, ma'am. The lawnmower, the dang thing wasn't cutting. I had to
shut... Get off! Go on! Get off this property at once!
What?
Go and don't ever come back! Do you hear? Don't ever come back! Don't ever come back!
Morning, Miss Skinner. Lovely day.
I turned and ran, right back to my living room. I stood shivering there in a beam of sunlight. I waited for him to come bursting into the room after me. I waited, and then the doorbell rang. Who is it?
It's Mrs. Gray.
Oh, just a moment. Come in.
Did I disturb you?
Oh, no, no, not at all.
Then I will come in, but I can only stay a minute.
Would you like some coffee?
Oh, no, thank you. When I was so sick, you remember, the doctor absolutely forbid me having any more coffee.
Oh, I didn't know that. Sit down, please.
Do you drink much coffee?
No. Why do you ask?
Well, I thought perhaps your recent attacks might have been caused by that. Oh. Mr. Gregg is a great one for aspirin and salt tablets. I think it's much simpler than that. Cut out coffee.
Well, I think my attacks were just caused by this heat. I plan a sea voyage.
Oh, how splendid. That will certainly fix you. I don't mean to be disrespectful, heaven knows, but perhaps on the boat you might meet a fine young man who... Well...
Perhaps.
When do you plan to leave?
This afternoon. I'm leaving from New York.
Oh, you can't.
Pardon?
Why, the clubhouse, the unveiling ceremonies are this afternoon.
Oh, I forgot.
Well, you simply can't leave. We have no one who can replace you on the speaker's platform.
Oh, well, all right then, Mrs. Gregg. I'll stay for the ceremonies. I drove to the new clubhouse with Mr. and Mrs. Gregg. The building was really very lovely. It was almost ready for occupancy. We were unveiling a heroic figure which graced the entranceway. Our speaker's platform was built alongside the figure, and quite a few of the members and their families were sitting on the wooden benches in the front patio, waiting for the ceremonies to begin.
Isn't this exciting?
Yes, it is, very.
The ladies have done a marvelous job.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gray.
Oh, what's that fellow doing up there?
Where?
Oh, you see, up on the roof there.
Oh.
The workman.
Yes. Yes, it makes me nervous to see people at such heights.
He's awfully close to the edge. But he knows his business, I imagine.
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, I'm very anxious to hear your little talk, Mrs. Skinner.
Well, thank you, Mr. Rick.
And I think you've managed admirably since you're unfortunate.
Yeah.
Well, you understand.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I think we should get on with it, eh?
Well, I believe it'll only be a few more minutes.
What
is it?
What
is it?
Good heavens. Look, workman, he's going to fall.
Someone catch him. He's hanging on the edge.
Some of the men are running up there now.
They've got to catch him.
Oh, they will.
Oh, no.
He's falling.
Oh, no.
Turn your eyes, ladies. No. Turn your eyes.
I did it.
What?
I did it.
Why not?
I did it. I did it. I killed him.
He's not hurt at all.
I killed him.
You're not hurt.
I killed him.
Let me take you home.
Listen to me. I killed him. Listen to me. Don't you understand?
I understand.
I killed him, Mr. Brown. May the senators get you hear it. I killed him.
I know, ma'am. It's going to be all right, you know. You just come along with me, that's all. Come on, Mr.
Sign it, Jonathan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shame.
Yeah.
People do funny things.
Yeah. Did you pay the fella?
Mm-hmm. He's clever. Very clever.
He sure is. I really thought he was falling off that building.
Mm-hmm. Used to be an acrobat.
Ah. How did he make that noise?
He was holding tenpenny nails in his hands. Scraped them along the face of the building as he slid down.
Did you think of that, too?
Uh-huh.
Made an awful racket.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a pity. Nice lady, you know.
Yeah.
What the devil are you doing?
Oh, fixing my nails, I guess.
Well, cut it out, will you?
Sure. What's the matter with you?
Noise makes me nervous, I guess. You know?
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma, America's favorite wines. Tonight's suspense play was written by Kathy and Elliot Ewis. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Ann Baxter as star of Suspense. Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 13th of February, 1947, on CBS. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.